Hello and croeso to episode 137 of Alternative Wales, the podcast. And I think we're approaching the most depressing podcast that we've ever put out. I've really contemplated not doing this today because I really didn't feel like it. But I knew we couldn't do tomorrow. And then by the time next week comes around, it's sort of ancient history, isn't it? The way football moves. So we're here, and hopefully it'll be a form of therapy for us, and a form of therapy for you, as we sort of look back on the first real heartbreak we've had in Welsh football for quite a long time. And to discuss that with me tonight, we've got Rodri Davies. Rod, you went straight into yesterday off the back of a night shift. So not only are you dealing with the heartbreak, you're also dealing with a day on the booze on the back of a night shift. So I do feel for you.
Yeah, well, it's the things I do to myself, that is. The only thing I couldn't control is the penalty shootout. But it's just one of those things. If I wasn't hungover, then I'd probably be a bit more downbeat, I think. So
yeah.
Because it's just kind of masking the other, the fact that I'm hungover is a nice distraction, really, today, to be honest with
you. That's the first time anyone's ever said that. We've also got Adrian Phillips joining us tonight in maybe a more serious pundit role after his impressive performance on the last pod, where he actually made some really good points. So, Phillips, how are you? Are you there?
Steady on, I won't be able to get out my front door if you carry on like this. Yeah, good. Well, not good at all. Absolutely devastated, but, you know, yeah.
And we've also got Megan on for maybe the whole pod. Depends how long we go. She might have to disappear later. But Megan, we spoke earlier and I sort of forgot that this is your first Welsh football heartbreak after 2019.
Yeah, this is my first football heartbreak, like, in total. I've never felt as sick as I did last night. And I was there in a work capacity, so I was meant to be, like, non-biased, but I genuinely thought I was going to puke. And then I told the person next to me I was going to puke, and they looked at me like, you're not supposed to get this invested. that was horrible. I want, like, you know when everyone talks about 1977 and 1985, 1993, and you hear it and you just sort of let it and you're like, yeah, it was bad. And you just don't really know how bad it was. That was my first experience of genuinely how disgusting it was.
Yeah, it was a pretty, pretty weird night. Tense. It was tense. I think we all knew it was going to be tense. Obviously, Thursday went swimmingly, really, against the Finns. I think it outshone most of our expectations. I think we were all fairly confident going into the game, but maybe we played better and it was more comfortable than a lot of us had hoped. Maybe that gave us a false sense of security, but I think we were under no illusions that it was going to be tight. Big talking point pre-match was Rob Page going to change anything? Rod, he did one change, Kiefer Moore in for David Brooks. Obviously, in hindsight now, we realise that David Brooks was ill for a lot of the week, and we may get on to his inclusion into the game later on, but it did feel like maybe it wasn't the right decision to swap Moore in for Brooks. What do you reckon?
I'm not sure whether it was right not to start Moore, but I think a lot of people's biggest issues is the fact that Moore stayed on as long as he did, really. Like, when you're changing things up, then the obvious change for me was leaving Brennan on and taking Kiefer off, but that's not the way he went. And, you know, he knows what he was thinking, so that's fine on that side. But, yeah, if Brooks was ill all week, I didn't know that, so I've kind of just not been keeping up with anything today. But, it makes sense to bring Kiefer in for Brooksy, because I don't know whether you would have started Dan James and kept the same sort of side on, but yeah. I didn't have a problem with him putting Moore on, but from the start, but that for me, like a lot of people have commented, is the change I would have made is bringing Kiefer off when he brought Brennan off. Yeah.
It's difficult, isn't it, because of how fine the margins were. You know, and obviously we go on to win that penalty shootout, and half the conversations we'll probably have now, we would never have even entertained in the first place. But I guess because we essentially failed on the night, then we look at sort of everything that went wrong and possibly why things could have been different. Phillips, as a man of your stature in the game, where do you think it went wrong in the end? I mean, did it even go wrong in the end? You mean, you look at we had the, you know, the better of the game in terms of chances, shots on target, you know, where do you think where did it go wrong for you?
I read somewhere today that Poland only had 5 shots on target and they
didn't
were
have
penalties.
Any shots. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. I was going to say,
I'm going to show some solidarity with my fellow manager, because obviously I'm a well-documented high-profile manager. It's not easy to manage and to change things, but I think, like, who am I to say, but his lack of experience maybe shone through, because at the end, it was more or less Football Manager. He was just putting all his attacking players on. Like, we had Dan James at right fullback or wing back. And well, that's what it looked like he was playing. It just looked like he chucked everyone on, like, keep, like, that clown who gives me a lift sometimes just said, like, you should have taken more off. And then, yeah, I don't know. It looked to me just he chucked all of his attacking options on with no real plan of how he's going to get the ball to any of them.
Yeah. Yeah, I think with the Dan James sub, obviously he did come on in an attacking position. It was only because Conor Roberts was injured. Megan, I think this sums up really Paige in a nutshell in terms of his in-game management has always really been the criticism that's been leveled towards him. And we'll probably get into that a bit more in a bit, but I think what that Dan James going to full wing back showed was his lack of trust in some of the squad players. And I don't know if that's all Paige's fault. I don't think it is necessarily, because we haven't had many games where we can play different players. But realistically, with Wes Burns injured, if we were to sub Conor Roberts in a like for like, it would probably have been Jay De Silva, you know, play Nico on the right, Jay De Silva on the left. But I can understand why he wouldn't have brought on De Silva, because he's never played an international game of football in his life, and we're about to throw him in with 20 minutes to go in a shit or bust qualifier. Do you think that the reason we were seeing mainly attacking players is because Paige was sticking with the lads that he trusted rather than gambling on someone?
Yeah, I think it's that, but I also think that it was him slightly being a little stubborn in terms of the structure. Like, he wanted to keep with wing backs. He didn't want to play in another way, which, you know, it goes back to in-game management. What if you did tweak the structure a little bit? You take Kiefer off, you go to a back four, you get Ben Davis, and someone even mentioned putting Ampadu back into a back line. Someone said bring Ramsey on, but like, there were all these things you could have kind of experimented a tiny bit more with. But again, like, that's all in retrospect. It's so easy to say from like where we all sit, this is what I would have done. But in the moment, it's a lot harder. And I think the David Brooks thing was tough, not knowing that. But I just remember when I saw Kiefer on the starting 11, I felt a little uncertain, because it felt like he was playing Poland's game. It felt like that's what he was trying to do. And it just felt like against Finland, Wales had played their game, and they showed a lot of threat doing that. And I get, though, putting Kiefer in, because the headers worked, you know, in defense and in attack. But Kiefer,
he had our best chance. He had our best chance. He put forcing the save out of Chesney. So, you know, I've said it already this pod, and I probably will say it again later in the pod. You know, we win that penalty shootout, and we're not talking about any of this.
Exactly.
That's it. I don't think I don't think the group or failure to qualify came down just on last night. You know, I think it's quite clear that we've said all along, the Armenia home game, I think we even said it after, if we don't qualify, tonight's the night we failed, regardless of what happens going forward.
That whole summer, you think they got 0 points from that. That is completely unacceptable. And I know that they did improve afterwards, which, again, that is testament to Paige improving. Mm-hmm. But it feels like the in-game management side of it really hasn't improved since Denmark. Like that to me was such a pivotal game. And it just doesn't feel like there's been a lot of adaptation from there. So but that also comes down to the FAW maybe trying to help him, like bring in, like if he's not going to be this ultimate tactician, get someone on the touchline with him that can be that for him. Clearly the players want to play for him. And it feels like if they're going to stick with Paige, which is what they're doing, then something has to change around Paige if you're not going to change Paige.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right, Megan. And that has been the criticism that's been leveled towards him consistently in our spaces on Monday evening. My dad said that it's plan B that's his worry. And I think he's absolutely right. When plan A works, like it did against Finland, we're unplayable. We're a really good side. But it doesn't work every time. And, you know, I think that Denmark game was the first example of it. I think the Armenia game, the Iran game, he didn't change it when things were clearly not going right. And I think that's the biggest worry. Obviously, Rod, I know you're only just sort of finding out about Brooks being ill, and he barely trained since Thursday. Do you think that's the prime example of in-game management? We had 6 substitutes available to us, 5 in normal time, 1 in extra time. He made 3. One of them was to bring Brooks on before bringing him off again for Broadhead. Broadhead didn't even take a penalty. Do you think that is a failure from a management point of view?
You could see it that way with the Brooks substitution, but if Brooks has been given the all clear and been told he's fit and he's saying himself he's fit, then Paige is going to want to use him, isn't he? And
yeah,
I suppose that could be down to a player responsibility. Maybe he knew he wasn't, you know, feeling fine and well enough to contribute like he should. So if his illness affected the amount of time he could actually contribute, then yeah, I'm not sure I can put that on Paige. But then you've got the likes of Ramsey included in the matchday squad. And I don't think he was ever intending of using him by the looks of it, because surely he would have been on in extra time. The quality of player he is. I know he hasn't played much over the last 4 or 5 months or whatever it is, but what's the point of having him in a matchday squad if you're not going to use him or have him as a, you know, potential for circumstances like extra time, you know? I was just baffled by that, because I don't know how many players we had in the overall squad, but you've got to leave a certain amount out of the matchday squad and... You may as well have put in someone like, I don't know.
Colwill.
Yeah, Ruben. Colwill. Probably, yeah, exactly.
Who'd had such a good game for the 21s on Friday.
Yeah.
You know, he's that sort of maverick player that could change a game like that. Yeah. You know, it's a gamble. It's a risk to put a player like that on. But to unlock a defence, you know, at that time in a match, then maybe he could have been an option. I'm not saying, you know, he had to come on, but he was definitely a better option than Ramsey, who may not have had any intention of getting on the pitch. I don't think I even saw him warm up, but I mean, I wasn't paying too much attention to that, so I might be wrong.
It was unlocking their defence, which, like, neither side could unlock each other's defence, really. That was the story of the game. So you got one of them players on the bench in Ramsey. So, you know, what it tells me is that he wasn't fit enough or relied upon as an actual substitute option. So that's strange all around, that is, for me. But because we really could have done with that player who can make that, you know, difference, like the little passes or, you know, finding space where others can't and stuff. So yeah, for me, that's got to be on Paige. But you know, there's certain things every manager does that you question as a fan. So but we tend to do it quite a lot with Paige, especially, like, I don't think we've won that many games in the last couple of years. So it's been more and more often where we've been able to see these flaws to Paige's management, really. So, and unfortunately, kind of, for me, it's cost us last night because we could all see it needed changing up, and I don't think he changed it up how we needed it to be changed up. So,
yeah, I think you... Megan, you said earlier that, you know, he was very tied to that system. It felt like he didn't want to change from the 5-2-3 or whatever exactly we were playing. And I felt like, yeah, Ramsey doesn't naturally fit into that, or Colwell as well wouldn't naturally fit into that. So, you know.
In his post-match press conference, and we asked him, like, kind of what was the reasoning behind DJ effectively? And he said that initially they wanted DJ playing up front, obviously because of his pace and what he's capable of. And then he said the moment that Connor got injured, they realized that they would have to push him backwards because someone was going to have to go backwards. And I'm not sure who said it, but one of them said, but you didn't have to, because you could have, like we already said, like you could have adjusted the system. Like you could have had a fullback because you had Ben Davis there, who's more than capable.
Well, that's what I thought he was going to do.
Play fullback. So like that is where I do think like that, again, that just I think it goes back to what Raji was saying with a little bit of experience, like acumen, knowing how to do that, and just also like trusting yourself to do it and backing yourself. And that was a huge pressure moment for everyone in that squad. And you could see DJ's face when he went to go take a penalty. Like I've never seen someone look so nervous before. But there was, and like you look at his face and you knew what was going to come.
Yeah, yeah. Phillips, obviously, we've mentioned, you know, how this conversation would be very different if we'd won the penalty shootout. And there was plenty of positives to take from last night. So I think we should sort of mention a few of them. Defensively, I thought we were absolutely unbelievable. And I know Mepham's had his critics, but I thought he was superb. Obviously, did end up getting sent off. Thankfully, it was late enough that it did make a difference. Rodon was just, you know, absolute man mounted. Ben Davis, I tweeted earlier, I think he's one of our best ever players. I think they deserve some credit, don't they? Because they kept one of the best strikers of all time quiet.
Yeah, 100%. Like you've all said. Well, you've all summed up what we've done wrong. But like we've had some impressive performances over this campaign. But I think it hurts more to go out like that. We've never had a penalty shootout. We've had some ropey like defeats and stuff. But remember the Ireland playoff?
Oh yeah.
Like that was like a slow death, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was like they scored and we knew we were gonna get back into it. But I think last night was kind of so final. It's a one kick. And I think that's why it hurts so much, because it's like an instant of like, I don't know, horrifying pain, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is, though, isn't it? It's like...
You're absolutely right.
It's like, because when we were watching the Ireland game, you were like, whatever we do here, we are not going to score and we're going out.
And it just slipped away, didn't it, as the minutes went by.
Yeah, you got to 80 minutes and you've gone, fuck, we're not going to get into the Euro qualify, weren't it?
It was World Cup.
World Cup, sorry. So we're like, oh, we're not going to another World Cup. But we had like 10 minutes to kind of go, right, okay, fair enough. But last night was like, oh, fair play, we've held them, we're doing all right. And now it comes down to penalties, and then you're just like, it's just one kick, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it hurts that much more for all of us, because it just comes down to one kick, and then it's done, isn't it? So I know, but like you said, it's not just that one kick, is it? It goes back to the Armenian, like Megan said, in the summer, where we didn't take any points. I meant to talk about the positives. I've got to the negatives. the defense was good, and some of the midfield were good. Positivity.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I guess looking back on the campaign as a whole, I think we'll do a proper debrief on the campaign as a whole in a week or two when the dust settles a bit more. But Megan, we only won 3 games out of 8.
Yeah.
That's not good enough, is it? You know, and 2 of them are against Latvia.
Yeah, it goes back to this idea of like what people were expecting from this campaign, because obviously it was going to be the first one from Gareth Bale's retirement. But even as the Gareth Bale era was ending, people could tell that he wasn't at his best and he was just a moments player. So it felt like the players who were playing around him at least would have had the experience and the exposure and sort of the dynamism to sort of exceed him, if you will, or succeed him. So with this campaign, it was kind of interesting that a lot of people still expected Wales to qualify, like even without Gareth Bale. So I think this idea of transition is quite a difficult one. And that's why the 3 out of 8 just feels like a difficult pill to swallow, because there should have been more there. There should have been better wins. And I know that also Jordan James didn't play till after the summer. So that is a tough one to take, because you think about if Jordan had been in the squad throughout, then maybe things would have been different. So, I mean, like, in terms of positives, that was a real positive from the whole campaign. But also, I don't think he played his best game against Poland the other night. I thought Ampadu was great in terms of a positive. I did think he was his genuine, wonderful self. But, yeah, the 3-for-8 isn't good enough. That's what lost, basically, last night. And it's important to talk about it, I think. And Paige will know that. All the players will know that. They're all going to be racking their brains thinking about how, like, you know, thinking about all the things they could have done differently and the games that should have gone differently. And even the 1-1 against Turkey, like, Wales were the better side there and they could not score and get the winner. So, you know, it's about unlocking defenses, like Rodri had been saying, and they weren't able to do that. And you have to start wondering if that is a tactical problem or, because I think the players are good enough, especially since they've started to play full time. Yeah. And like that as a squad, that is a very capable squad. I'm not saying it's the greatest squad ever, but it is, like, as a unit, that is a more than capable squad.
Yeah, I think the word transition has been banded around a lot since Bale retired. And it doesn't feel like we're transitioning as a squad, but we're transitioning away from reliance on Gareth Bale and obviously Joe Allen and even to a degree Ramsey, because he hasn't featured much. And I think we won't see many more games featuring Aaron Ramsey.
Right. There's also a transition in the fan base, if you want to go deep into it, because, like, we're long enough in the tooth to remember the crap days when we'd go down there and it would only be a couple of thousand and we just went out of obligation, basically. And there's a slot, and then who've been there for years and years. There's lots of people who've been there for longer than us. But there's also people who don't know anything but success. And you're going to try and marry both of them up where, like, you know, I remember going to watch Wales for years and years thinking, if we score, I'll be happy. And then, no, now we've got to kind of taper that expectation because we've been successful over the last few years. The younger generation, probably, will be the younger generation, think that we're going to win every game.
Yeah.
And then there's an outcry when we don't win every game, and we don't really deserve to win every game. But like Mega said, the team's good enough. But
yeah.
We just, like, I think, like you said, like the transition, it's got to be like also in the stands, like, because people need to understand where we've come from, I suppose.
Yeah, because I think we're now transitioning as a expectations wise from a team that was sort of, you know, this is unbelievable, we're doing these things, to now going, we want to keep doing these things, and we should have qualified for the Euros. You know, 24 teams out of whatever, 52, 54 UEFA nations, and, you know, 4 or 5 of them are bloody micro states, you know, so that will never even get close to qualifying for a tournament. So we should have really be qualified. We should be in the top 50%. But yeah, you're right. We can't get too carried away and want to qualify for everything. But I do think this was a chance missed, because the team's good enough. I think the players are experienced enough. You know, this team, we've had the core of this squad has been around for a long time. The core of this squad is the squad that qualified in 2016, in 2020.
Yeah.
You know, these aren't this young players, yes, but I saw, you know, someone put the ages of the players next time the Euros comes around, you know, and a lot of them are going to be 30 plus then and maybe past their peak. So yeah, that is a shame.
I think as well, it's quite interesting, like, if we're going to go deep or whatever and then talk about that is, oh, I had like a great idea, and now my exhaustion has just totally wiped it out of my head. That's horrible. Keep talking, and I'm sure it'll come back to me in like a second. Sorry, I've had like not even six. I've had like 3 hours of sleep today.
Yeah. Well.
Oh wait, no, I got it. I got it.
Go on.
Okay, so it's just really interesting that Rob Page has kind of become the cultural fault line between the fan base of, like, people believing that Wales should qualify, and people believing that we should still be appreciative, and this is still like a great success to get to this position. And it feels like Rob Page is literally the cultural fault line there. And you're either on one side or you're on the other. And I don't know what has happened or if it's why it's happened, but it feels like Rob has kind of become this, like, embodiment, if you will, of either like defeatism or not trying it hard enough. But then the other flip side of that is, like, you know, the last couple of years have been a golden era. Like, you know, maybe we should appreciate it.
Yeah. Right. Let's get on to the Rob Page question then before we wrap up, because that has sort of dominated, like Megan said. I think, you know, it seems to be quite black and white. I don't think it's as simple as that. Megan, you sent me your article earlier that you'd written and said, have I been too harsh on a page? I don't think you have. I think it was quite balanced and measured. And I think there's people who say, you know, like you said, just enjoy what we can. Rob Page has done a really good job. He deserves to stay in the job. And I think there's people who are saying, get him out, you know, call him a fraud or whatever. People bloody labeling him as football Twitter tends to do. Yeah. I think there's a middle ground where I think we can appreciate that he's done a good job, but I also think maybe his time is up, and I think he's taken his team as far as he can. Steve Williams, the FAW president, has come out and said that he's got a contract, he knows his job, but he's going to stick around. I don't know if we can take that as gospel, because I don't think the FAW are just going to review the whole campaign overnight. I think they've just come out on back page. I don't think that's final, and he will lead us to the World Cup campaign for sure. Rod, where do you stand on it all? Do you think a change is necessary going forward?
Well, for me, another point is that we haven't qualified now is going to leave a bit of a financial void.
Yeah. It's
whether we can afford to attract a bigger, better, more experienced coach, because we're going to have to pay off Page's contract because he's got another 2 years. And then find the money for a better coach. So that doesn't come from thin air, does it? So that's probably another thing that's got to be factored in. But for me, I agreed with your words there where you said, I think he's taken it as far as he can, and sentiment gets you so far in football, but you've got to make these brutal decisions. And I don't care, you know, personally, that the players love the manager, they love the next guy if the next guy's the right appointment. So, I think there's a couple of interested options available, isn't there? So, like Steve Cooper, a lot of people think he's like a natural, naturally going to be world manager one day. And he's at the moment available, and we're in between campaigns now. And we've had a glorious failure, but it's a failure all the same, because we should be qualifying when there's 24 spots up, I think, with this current batch of players. I know it's little old Wales and all that, but if it was 16 teams, then fair enough. But 24, I think we should be in there. And we fucked the group up. It wasn't about last night. We've played really well in these playoffs. I think we played much better in these playoffs than the previous playoffs that we got to the World Cup in. So, I'd like to see some fresh thinking, really. I'd like a new manager because the doubts I've got about Page's ability to change it up and kind of bring new ideas and new tactics, because I think that was the biggest problem last night, like moving Dan James to wing back. Like, I thought Dan James coming on that late in the game, running at tired defence in attack, was perfect, and within minutes he's, you know, defending for the rest of the game. So for me, I'd change it. I think sentiment has got its place in football, but it can hold you back. So and I think I think keeping Page now will just be kind of a sentimental option, and just because he's, you know, a player's favourite type of thing. So, change it for me.
Yeah, it feels like, you know, when Coleman left, he left at the right time, I think, in hindsight. You know, he stepped away when he realised that maybe he had taken the team far. And you've got to change in football. You've got to have fresh ideas. And I think we've got a really good batch of players. We've got a really good young batch of players. And I think a fresh look and a bit of a change will definitely help. Where do you sit on it all, Phillips?
Well, if I'm not available, who do you think should do it, right?
It is.
I mean, I think we've always banded Cooper's name around, whether he would do it money-wise and ambitions-wise, because I think maybe he sets his stall at a good Premier League job, which, you know, unfortunately is a bit more attractive than an international job, as much as I wish that wasn't the case. Oshan is obviously one that gets mentioned, and obviously he's got a raft of contacts in the game. I mean,
would it be a non-Welshman? If it wasn't me, obviously.
Exactly, yeah. That's the other big debate. You know, if we're talking Welsh managers, the best Welsh manager at the moment is Rob Edwards, I'd say. But, I mean, he's not going to leave Luton right now, is he? Unless maybe they sack him at the end of the season. And then that might be a slightly different story. But, I mean, Luton would be bonkers to do that. I can't see that happening. Do you take a gamble on someone who first managerial job, like we did with Giggs? You know, does someone like, you know, one of the old 2016 crowd who's retired fancy a go at it? But that's a hell of a gamble. It paid off with gigs to a degree. I think, you know, I mean, I'm not saying bring gigs back by any stretch of the imagination, but he probably did a good job. Bellamy, again, another name. And like you said, then, if we're talking outside of Wales, then the list could be endless, couldn't it?
Paolo Di Canio. No, if you're asking me, yeah. I'm not going to pick a name because there's no point, is it? Because it could be anyone. But I think, like, the next appointment, if they were to get rid of Paige, is massive because Paige was already in the system. But, like, you're not going to give it to Matthew Jones, no, are you?
No, I don't think so.
It was like he'd done Port Vale for a bit, didn't he? And he's done a bit of bits and bobs before. And then he was already doing the 21s. So when Giggs had to unfortunately step aside, like,
by Paige unfortunately, already... you don't mean that like he should have stayed in the job, by the way, do you?
I just mean the circumstances were unfortunate. I just mean the circumstances for him having to step aside.
Just want to clarify that you'd rather not have a domestic abuser.
No. I'm firmly in the Giggs out camp from the day he got a job, as everyone knows. But yeah, I meant unfortunate circumstances. So what I'm saying is, but Paige is already in the system and he's like, you know, there and thereabouts. But there isn't anyone like that now. So the next appointment is a massive gamble because then you take away what's happening now. I know Paige plays his own formation, but I don't know, you check out all of the... I basically start from scratch to find someone new.
I guess that's why Oshin is quite an attractive thing because he probably knows the system well. Megan, you obviously cover the 21s and beyond as well. You've covered them. You've spoken to people like Matty Jones. Do you think that someone from within the association could be a succession plan? And I mean, also when we're talking about Paige and he hasn't lost his job, do you think that maybe a change is necessary?
The thing is, I don't think it's going to happen. I'll probably eat my words in a few months, but the FAW just missed out on like a huge windfall for them. It was looking like upwards of 5-6 million, like upwards of that. So that's a lot for a federation of the FAW size. So to get rid of Paige is going to be pricey, but then to get someone in that is going to be capable of pulling together a squad, making them greater than the sum of their parts, also incorporating youth, that is a huge, huge job. And that's probably for someone who's massively experienced, which means they're going to come with a massive price tag. And so all these things, like I just can't see them happening simply because I don't know where the money's going to come from. So I don't want to be like negative Nelly and like not entertain or indulge like these fanciful futures where potentially Paige does go, because I absolutely adore Paige. I've talked to him, I've spoken to him, I've interviewed him, I've had wine with him. I think he's one of the nicest people in the world. But in terms of football, I do think he could either use some help or he needs someone to maybe take over and do the job. But I just can't see it. I can't see it happening personally, which is kind of tough. You know, for the FAW to come out this soon and back him, it feels like they're stuck. But I don't know. Like in 3 months' time, they might gauge fan sentiment and they might do their review and they realize it's not supposed to be. But I don't think they'll get someone from internally unless they absolutely have to, unless they're completely cash strapped. And that's what they need to do. Because I don't think, again, like you get rid of Paige, you bring someone internal. I don't think you really get fans on side that way.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you're spot on there. I feel like it's just a good time. You know, now Nations League is the next round of games. It's 6 months until then. You know, we can sort of move on from Paige now and we don't have to appoint someone until July, August. You know,
also you made a really good point today about the lack of friendlies and stuff in the Nations League. And I had never thought about that. Like how Jordan James literally came in because of a friendly, not because of a Nations League campaign.
Yeah. And that's the thing, like someone like Jay De Silva, if we've had a few more friendlies, he may have had game time and then Paige might have trusted him to play as a wing back last night, but because he'd never had a cap and a minute before, he hadn't had a chance. So same with the centre midfielders, really. We've only seen Charlie Savage play against Gibraltar. He's not going to chuck him on if Jordan James is needing to be subbed. So yeah, it's the nature of the beast, isn't it? Anyway, we'll wrap up there and we'll Wait,
should we end on something positive? Like, what was your favorite part of the campaign? I don't know.
I just had it so sad. I just
had
a thought now about the new manager. If we're gonna need money, why didn't they get them actors that come in to do those motivational things? Just to leave a bit of money in the transfer kitty every time they bring someone in, you know. New manager kitty, just a, like a glass jar.
You could have a whip round in the glass.
Yeah. If you
don't give me the bucket, you will say it's empty.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
A dink fund.
Cussy dink.
I don't know.
Big Phil Scolari.
I was just thinking of classic international managers. Yeah.
I always
no, thank you.
Back in the day, I always wanted Lars Lagerbäck to manage us because he was really good. He was really good at like getting small nations qualified for tournaments.
Yeah,
I don't know what he's doing now. He was another bald man, so you never know. Maybe he'll
he's
carry on.
80, right?
Yeah, there's also that. Anyway, yeah, Megan, I think that's a nice way to finish. On a closing statement, Heath, what was your favourite moment of the campaign, either on the pitch or off the pitch? Phillips, we'll start with you.
By a mile, Broadhead's equaliser in Croatia.
I thought you were going to say getting the girl's number on the delayed flight home from, you were sat next to from Frankfurt.
I forgot about that. That did happen, actually. No, not that. Broadhead's equaliser, and then swinging our tops above our head for 20 minutes, singing Wales away. And then when he tapped that equaliser in, well, I've been in some away ends of away, but that was mental. And just the... And then the way we got clapped into the city centre by all the ultras. Pretty crazy, like.
That was a great...
mine. I got to go now because Mooney's ringing me.
Pleasure to have you, Phillips. Megan, before you go then, what was your moment of the campaign, on or off the pitch?
My moment of the campaign, I think... I loved that game after the Roy Keane stuff came out. And there was just total carnage. Yeah. And the way the players came out and like Paige was crying and it just felt like so euphoric. And that to me, like in terms of sentimentality or things you'd want to go back to, I'd go back to that night every single day.
By far our best footballing performance as well of the campaign. Yeah. We were brilliant. Rod, what about you?
Hard to pick another one out after those two, really. What I would say is that now, we've all experienced a penalty shootout, so that's surely a positive.
Yeah. We've got that hoodoo off our back.
Yeah, we have. We knew it was going to come one day with all these things we're qualifying for. So, in a funny old way, I'd say a penalty shootout, being involved in one of them, at least we know what to expect next time. And it's
saving
it's,
£4,000 for the summer.
Yeah, just I'm going to be donating a lot of money to defibrillators, I think, over the next few months, because Christ, I was having palpitations. Yeah.
Yeah, I think for me, other than the Croatia, I think I would have gone with you, Phillips, on that. It was the away end in Riga, which was the drunkest away end of all time. Everyone singing Brooks will tear you apart, and also the jubilation of finding Rodri in bed after we thought we'd lost him.
Yeah, that was such a drunk away end, I like really couldn't function as a human being. And it's probably one of the few times I've ever left a football match early.
Just went home. Just went to bed.
I just walked home straight to bed when Brooks scored whilst I was walking out the ground.
There was Operation Find Rodri that involved about three different police forces from three different continents that night.
Yeah. We got back into the city centre and we were having a drink and we were like, yeah, maybe we should actually see where Rodri is. when I saw him flat out asleep in bed, I've never felt so relieved. So
what a batshit FA Latvia got 8% lager in the away end. Tell you.
Yeah, so we'll
should be banned from international competitions. Yeah,
regardless of what happened last night, we'll always have those memories, and really, that's what football's about, as I've said a million times. Anyway, thank you both, Rodri, Phillips, and Megan for coming on. It's been a pleasure of a campaign, and it's a shame it didn't end the way we all wanted. But thanks for sticking with us throughout the campaign, whether you joined us at the start, whether you've been with us all the way through. It is what it is. We'll go again, we'll debrief as the weeks go by and the dust settles, and we'll sort of talk a bit more about future. But I just wanted to get something that was a bit raw out and immediately. So I hope it's helped in some way, shape or form. But again, yeah, thanks for listening. Thanks everyone for coming on, and Diolch yn fawr. We'll be back next week.